coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to praise name.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
Hey, what's good, y'all? It's your boy. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Welcome to Who Shot Ya? Oh, with me, as always, I got my man, to my right, film reviews editor at The Rep, Alonzo Duralde. What is good with you? Also, did you like how I threw the Duralde on
there? Very, yes. We're all in Nicaragua tonight.
Si, so sabe.
Wow, well, since I'm 11D, I binged watched the entire season 5 of Netflix's Grace and Frankie.
Okay.
And was enjoying it so much that I didn't realize that when I finally got to the end of the season that it was 2:15 in the morning, which is not a time I usually see. So that's how engrossed I was.
Yes,
so,
yeah.
You know, I don't know if you could hop in now and you have your start from the beginning, but I find the show really funny. I like the characters. I could watch Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin like eat lunch for 4 hours. I had a great time. I think it's a really fun season. So if you've been enjoying the show, you will also enjoy this.
All right, that's what's up. Also, I'm Frank and Grace, friend of the show, Baron Vaughn.
Yes, indeed.
Boom, that's what's up. That's what's up. That voice that you're right over there is film critic and host of the Switchblade Sisters podcast, April Wolf. April, what is good with you?
First off, played peekaboo with a coyote today.
Ooh.
It was fun.
Okay.
I was like walking in front of a dog, and then I was like, that dog hasn't got an owner. And then it turned around, and I turned around, and then we both tried to duck behind a bush. And then we both looked out, and it was like a weird, it was after, it got to the point where I started laughing to myself, and then eventually just had to leave.
You were doing the Groucho Marx mirror routine?
This coyote and I were on a different level. But I, my what's good is really that I'm still obsessed with HGTV, and I found that on my Sling app that I could watch the first episodes of The Property Brothers. And I gotta say, it is hilarious. It is like so sloppy, and these brothers have no idea what they're doing, and no one trusts them. It's a very, like, it's in its like 100th season right now, and when people go on The Property Brothers, they're like, oh, I trust them, they'll fix my house. And in the first season, it's just like people like, should we trust them? Like, actually having these conversations where they don't know if they're on a prank show. And it is hilarious. And the brothers are acting like they're on a prank show, so no one knows what's happening. And then eventually they get a house, and the people are shocked. They're like, we're not on a prank show. So definitely watch the earlier seasons of Property Brothers.
Property Brothers. All right. All right. And we have a special guest with us. This is my boy. He is a writer. A former writer on The Late Late Show with James Corden. He has a Comedy Central half-hour special that is hilarious. He has an album that you can buy on iTunes right now called The Twilight Door. My man, my boy, my guy, father-to-be, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, yeah.
Jared Logan in the building.
Hey, Ricky. It's
hey,
good
Jared.
To see you again.
Good to see you again 72 hours later.
Yeah. We just had an experience together. We'll talk about that in a minute,
we'll
probably.
We'll talk about that
probably.
Later. Yes.
First of all, I just want to say, if the Property Brothers weren't famous, they were just at business, you would not use them. You'd be like, the Property Brothers? Let's get a real estate agent. Why would we go to these guys?
Jim and Earl Property.
Yeah. And I, my what's good experience was today I sent a really clever Facebook birthday message to a friend.
Oh, excellent.
He and I both like the novelist John Wyndham, who wrote a book that was later turned into a good sci-fi movie called The Day of the Triffids.
Yeah. Oh, I remember
so
this movie.
We always talk about John Wyndham.
Which was then also turned into the Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
Well, based,
is that right?
Based on Wyndham's novel. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
See, I didn't even know that.
He and I
have read a couple of his books, and I said, Day of the Triffids, more like Day of the Terrifics, because today you were born.
Oh, my God.
Yes, sir.
The question was, what's good?
I'm sorry that everybody's tuning out right now. People are like, fuck this podcast. Click.
That's it. They're out, bro. They're out.
Yeah.
God, well, thanks for
us.
Coming
Rick,
by, Jared.
Save
All
us,
right,
Ricky.
I'll see
what's
you guys
good?
Later.
Oh, my God.
Oh, thank you for asking, Alonzo. What is good with me is I am in the middle of reading a fantastic book. This book is Making Movies by Sidney Lumet, who is one of my favorite directors. He directed Serpico. He directed Dog Day Afternoon.
The Wiz.
Thank you. He directed my one and only favorite musical, The Wiz, Alonso, your boy.
Yeah. Because I want a musical that has that Prince of the City feel to
it. The book is great because he gives like a really kind of like detailed history on his like filmography. Mm-hmm. And he has like no shame in saying like...
He's like a live TV guy, right? Did he start there or no?
He did start with live TV, okay. Yes.
And was he network? Did he do network?
He's network.
Yeah.
He is Prince of the City. He is 12 Angry Men.
Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
What's that?
Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
Before the Devil Knows You're Dead.
He did Equus, too. Didn't he do a film version of Equus?
Sounds familiar, but I'm not sure.
I think he did.
Did he do Failsafe? Is he Failsafe
No,
as well?
That's... it's not Frankenheimer. Oh, maybe he is Failsafe. Yeah, because Frankenheimer is 7 Days in May, which I always put those two together. I think you're right, yes.
As far as, like, The Wiz, he gives, like a detailed history of his, like, filmography and, like, is very honest when the movies that he thinks he knocked out the park and movies where he's like, I let that one get away from me. He's very adamant. Like, The Wiz, he let it get away from him. You know, somewhere along the lines, the lines of communication fell apart, and it's just not the movie that he thought it was going to be.
He did direct Equus.
Oh, there you go.
Demaine Davis came on Switchblade, and she chose The Wiz, so that is an upcoming episode.
Oh, is that right?
So I've had to do some deep research on that movie. So
nice. Oh, great, great. It's a great book. I can't recommend it enough if anybody out there is looking to just read about film and get like a little knowledge of film behind the scenes. All right. Hey, on today's episode, we are going to talk about the long-awaited, the cap to the trilogy of M. Night Shyamalan's Unbreakable, Split, and now Glass has finally arrived. We're also going to talk about the Oscar nominations, which were announced this very morning. And at the end of the episode, we will also have our staff picks. But first, it's time for It a Dick, our news segment, which is short for Is This Important? Do I Care? How it works is we're all going to read a news blurb or headline, and everybody's going to chime in with by answering these two simple questions. Is it important? Do I care? The first one we're going to start with is this was a staff pick from Alonzo last week. Two documentaries were released, one on Hulu and one on Netflix, were released about the Fyre Festival. Fyre Festival was a festival that was supposed to happen on an island owned by Pablo Escobar.
Yes. How did it go wrong?
It was all being run by Billy McFarland and Ja Rule. I mean, talk with the real Property Brothers, in my opinion.
I definitely, whatever he does, I'm going to invest in it. That's my 401k is following Ja Rule.
Billy McFarland and Ja Rule, two of the main orchestrators of the festival. Ja Rule, now, the festival never happened. It was just the both of the documentaries show you how just Billy McFarland is basically a con man.
Yes.
People showed up to this island. It was a hot mess. Billy McFarland is now in prison. Ja Rule is now on Twitter saying, hey, I wasn't the one. Ja Rule was on Twitter quoting a line from Malcolm X. He tweeted, I too was hustle, scam, bamboozled, hoodwink, led astray. He also tweeted, I had an amazing vision to create a festival like no other. I would never scam or fraud anyone. What sense does that make? I think if you watch those documentaries, you will get a very good sense of what Ja Rule's role was in this festival. Is this important? Do you all care?
Oh, God. One of my favorite lines in the whole movie is Ja Rule on that conference call being like, it's not a fraud. This isn't fraud. False advertising, maybe, but it's not fraud.
Yeah. Just, you know, they're very different. And Ja Rule's the one who knows the nuances of business, yes. For sure. So.
Yes. I remember, and people talk about this in the documentaries. I mean, I remember watching it in real time on Twitter and on Instagram, you know, just as far as like, what the hell is this festival? All these models are going to be there. And then these, you know, people went to this island. And it was the people who were showing up in my feed were like Instagram influencers, people who like when you see them on Instagram, you're like, ugh, it just kind of make the hairs on the back of my neck stand up a little bit. And it's just going horribly. They were promised
luxury accommodations, and gourmet meals and yoga on the beach. And they got FEMA tents and a cheese sandwich
and
Blink 182 canceled.
Yeah. And all the bands canceled. Blink 182 canceled. I'm trying to remember who else.
Major Lazer
canceled. Kanye was rumored to be there. He canceled. I mean, it was just like it's similar to, I would say, almost to like watching Gimme Shelter. where you kind of like see like Mick Jagger and Charlie Watts like watching the footage. In the Hulu documentary, Billy McFarlane actually participates in the documentary, and they ask him questions, and some questions he answers, some he doesn't. But it's I found it fascinating.
I feel less guilty about the sort of Schadenfreude enjoyment I got out of seeing, like, you know, social media types being stranded on a beach, because the most heartbreaking story of the whole thing is the woman in the Bahamas who paid the staff that made meals and did all this stuff, and then she had to pay them out of her own life savings because she got screwed by Billy McFarlane. She was one of many people that he didn't pay, and you're like, oh god, this is terrible. But somebody started a GoFundMe for her. It exceeded its goal, so like she's been repaid. It's like, great. Okay,
she's good. So everybody else got what they deserved.
Now I just have to feel bad for all the people that worked for Billy McFarlane in the office in New York and had no idea they were, you know, like signing up for a shit show.
I feel like the Hulu documentary makes it pretty clear that they should have known.
Well,
like, actually interviewing Billy McFarlane, I think, despite the fact that they paid for that interview, it was good to illustrate the fact that, like, everyone's like, oh, Billy's a mastermind. I would just do anything for Billy. And then in an interview, he's like, yeah, just a guy. And I'm like, that's the guy who fucking bamboozles you? And I'm like, no, this is your deal.
I bet when he's not being grilled on camera, he's a very cocoaly charming person, you know, and a big picture thinker, and I could see where he could dazzle like somebody young who's like just out of college and like, oh, I have this office
what
gig
about
and
that, like the interview on like Fox Business or something that both documentaries show where he was like talking about his app where he was just like dead eye stare and like, yeah, and
that's just
a really dumb person was in charge, and thank God that could never happen. Say
well,
that's the American government.
That's the underlying thing of both of these docs, of like, what are we falling for now, and how, and you know, and to what end?
I just consider like those fuck Jerry people and like all.
Oh
the
yeah,
employees,
no, they knew.
Like, I just figure that they're all complicit in some way. They're like Trump voters to me, where they're just like, oh, you didn't know? Okay. That's willful ignorance.
Last week it was announced Jason Reitman is going to write and direct an all-male Ghostbusters sequel. This was met with a huge amount of backlash from, among other people, Leslie Jones, who starred in the 2015 all-female reboot of Ghostbusters. On Twitter, she said, so insulting, like, fuck us, we didn't count. It's like something Trump would do. It's very sad. This is the response I get, when the point is, if they make this new one with all men and it does well, which it will, it might feel like boys are better. It makes my heart drop. Is this important? Do you care?
Who is this Jason Reitman?
Well, he's directed several failures, but he's a white guy with a good last name, and so he's working his way up in this crazy business we call Hollywood. Yeah, this is this is such a failing upward thing. He's directed so many movies that have tanked, some good, some not. But you're a white dude, let's hand you a giant franchise, particularly because you're the son of the guy who directed the first one.
I think people should inherit their father's franchises. I think that's a good way to go with this.
Yeah.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I want Drew Barrymore to take over all of John Barrymore's old roles since she's his granddaughter.
Holy shit. I'm just imagining Drew Barrymore directing, like, all of the remakes of John Barrymore. Oh, my God.
This sucks for any number of reasons. First of all, I await the day that everybody calms the fuck down about the Paul Feig Ghostbusters and acknowledges that it was actually good, you know, because it just became this thing where, like, all these Twitter bros got their, you know, underwear in a joint about it and just, like, you know, that was insane. And I think it's a really good movie. It's a fun movie. And the director's cut is even better.
What was your favorite part about the Paul Feig Ghostbusters? Was it when Ozzy Osbourne shows up and is like,
I think Ricky didn't like it.
I don't remember that part.
Is that right? Oh, that was like...
I like it when Andy Garcia says, never compare me to the Jaws mayor.
Andy Garcia's the best thing in that movie.
Oh, come on. Kate McKinnon is fucking brilliant in that movie. She is giving a next level, like, Jerry Lewis meets Carmen Miranda, like, in her own movie thing that is great to watch.
I think everything about it was good. I just think that the directing and cinematography is so different from the original Ghostbusters, which revolutionized sci-fi comedy cinematography.
That's cause... why you gotta get the sun. It's genetic. He's got the cinematography in his penis.
Yeah, I would rather have. I would rather see Catherine Reitman direct this, but you know she's not a director, so whatever.
Oh. Okay. How about this story? Each year, AMC Theaters, Regal Cinemas, and Cinemark host a showcase of the Best Picture nominees. It's a way for people to see movies they may have missed out on earlier in the year. But according to Deadline, this year, all three of them are refusing to showcase Alfonso Cuarón's Roma. And it's because it was released by Netflix, obviously. Here's AMC's statement. Quote, this year, Academy members nominated a film that was never licensed to AMC to play in our theaters. As such, it is not included in the AMC Best Picture Showcase. Roma was not licensed to play at AMC because they would not agree to, apparently, to Netflix's rules for screening the film in theaters. So, is this important and do you care?
Boo. This sucks. Like, because this is a thing that AMC's been doing for like decades now, where they have these weekend long marathons and you go in and you see all the nominees. And it's like, you know, to not show this one because, hey, it's Netflix and they're digging anywhere. It's like, this is Netflix's first Best Picture nomination. Everybody just like grow up and cope with that fact and screen the goddamn movie and let people see it on the big screen.
Are they allowed to, though? If Netflix doesn't want them to, then they can't, though.
Well, I don't think Netflix wanted to open in an AMC theater like for a general run, but this is a different thing. There's
no statement from Netflix about what their requirements were and if that was even possible for them. So I'm not necessarily blaming all on AMC. Netflix is notoriously hard to work with when it comes to their screening stuff.
It feels like AMC doesn't want to screen a film by the people that are killing movie theaters. Which doesn't seem crazy to me.
Well,
also, I just want to put a scenario out to you. Hey, you want to go see a movie? They have the Oscar Best Picture nominees. Would you like to see a 1970s housekeeper in Mexico City or Black Panther? I guess I'll go see Black Panther.
But they sell...
I mean,
like,
I would like to, you know...
It's a thing where they sell, like, block tickets to the whole thing. Like, people pay, like, $25 and they go for the entire weekend
and see
all of them.
Yeah, like a big marathon.
Cool. Yeah, that's so actually a great way to see them.
Right, so it's not like they're, like, showing them individually and they're just not doing this one. It's like, this is normally, collectively, they do all of them. And in years past, it's been like, some of these movies are already out on DVD because they came out in February. And some of these movies are actually showing in the house next door in their regular run, but we're also including it in this package. But we're not going to include Roma because, meh. And so, I don't know. I find it, maybe Netflix is at fault as well. I don't know, but I hope both sides work it out, just because it would be nice to have more people have the opportunity to see it projected and to really enjoy that sound in a theater.
Well,
the way
I mean,
they,
the theaters,
you know,
will have to pay Netflix to play it, and we don't know what Netflix's are like, what their demands are. Like, is it even possible for them to do it? I mean, they sound like kidnappers now.
We don't know what their demands are.
Have we heard anything?
Release the movie!
I'm sitting by the phone. I mean, like, it's showing at the Vista here in L.A. I mean, it has had theatrical runs. I just don't think it's had theatrical runs at these big chains. Whether that's because AMC is being a pain in the ass, or the big chains are, or they both are,
what if
which is certainly plausible.
What if they're both? This is the way everyone's an asshole.
I mean, I would say boycott AMC and either go see Roma at another theater or watch it at home. Like, I'm at the point where I just want people to see Roma.
Yes.
You know, like, AMC, you're not on board, then take that shit to St. Elsewhere. I don't have time to, like...
Yeah, enjoy screening Green Book.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I want so many people to watch Roma. Roma is literally playing in your house right now if you have Netflix. So see it there. Like, sorry, AMC. Show, you know, fucking the Lord of the Rings trilogy again or whatever you do every Christmas. Like, I just don't... I guess I don't care.
But it's important.
But it is important. Yeah. Thank you.
It's important, and yet I don't care.
A very rare combo.
Hey, y'all. We are going to talk Glass right after a word from another Max Fun Show.
Hi, I'm Allie Gertz.
And I'm Julia Prescott, and we're the host of
Everything's Coming Up, Simpsons. every episode, we cover a different episode of The Simpsons that is a favorite of our special guests.
We've had guests that are showrunners and writers and voice actors like Nancy Cartwright.
I got a D-, I passed!
And we've also had people that are on the Max Fun Network already.
We've had Weird Al Yankovic on the show.
I was just struck by how sharp the writing is. I mean, yeah. That's no surprise because it's The Simpsons, but I mean, like, you can't say that about a lot of TV shows, particularly ones that at that point had been on the air for 14 years.
Find us on MaximumFun.org, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, smell you later.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio today are...
Alonzo Duralde.
Jared Logan.
April Wolf.
All right, today we are talking Glass, and I, once again, will be giving you a synopsis...
Oh, please do.
...of this film.
I can't wait to see you do that.
It's going to take me a minute.
Okay.
So,
By the way, now's a good time to ask, how spoilery are we going to be here?
I think we should be very spoilery with this movie,
okay.
Because the way Glass is presented to you, it's like, if you haven't seen the movie, if you haven't seen the first two, I don't know what to tell you.
Right, right.
So I think that's kind of how I'm going to treat this one. You know,
okay.
I will be speaking... full-on spoilers.
We're going to be twisting the night away.
Yeah, yes. All right, so let's go back to 1999, starting with the first movie in this trilogy, Unbreakable, which starred Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson. Bruce Willis plays David Dunn, who discovers he's a superhero after he's the lone survivor of a horrible train accident. Samuel Jackson, playing Mr. Glass, is the person who's been trying to find the existence of superheroes. He is also the reason for the train crash. Second movie in the series was Split. In Split, we are introduced to Kevin, who is played by James McAvoy, who has 23 different personalities. Beneath all of those personalities is the Beast. The Beast kidnaps three teenage girls. One gets away. She is played by Anya Taylor-Joy, and so does Kevin. Which brings us to 2019's Glass. We now have all three of our main characters, David Dunn, James McAvoy playing the Beast, Kevin, and 21 other personalities, and Mr. Glass, Elijah Price, all stuck in an insane asylum that is being run by Sarah Paulson. She plays a psychiatrist who's trying to convince all three of them that they are suffering from delusions of grandeur. None of them are superheroes. But of course, this is an M. Night Shyamalan film, so not all is what it seems.
I had not seen any of these films.
Okay.
So to prepare for this episode in the last 4 or 5 days, I had to watch Unbreakable, mm-hmm. and Split, mm-hmm. and Glass... And fuck you all.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah, I'm very interested with someone who is just now seeing this stuff thinks. And you didn't like them.
I was not entertained.
At all.
Not particularly. I mean, I knew what was going to happen in Unbreakable. That's mm-hmm. obviously been 15 years plus ruined for me now. So, you know, that moment of like, what was taken from me? So what I was left was like, okay, so this is... What if we did a superhero origin story, but it was like super dour and super blue collar? And it's like, okay, that's kind of an interesting idea, but not for 2 solid hours. And then the next one, it's like, what if we let James McAvoy do like acting class 101 and twitch around and do different voices and stances and like ham it up like crazy? And like, well, that would be kind of cool, but not for 2 solid hours. Which then brings us to Glass, where it's like, let's do all of that stuff at the same time and have this like intricate plot that requires a secret society and the most incompetent psychiatric hospital ever to exist on Earth for 2 solid hours.
I agree with most
of
what
you
said.
I can't disagree with almost anything you said.
You love Unbreakable.
I do love Unbreakable. Look, I'm about to tell you that I love Glass, and it is a bad movie. It is it doesn't make any sense. It looks cheap.
Yeah.
And with the brass balls to do a hard sequel to 2 movies.
Mm.
Like you said, you had to see 3 movies to see this movie. Like, and one of them is 19 years old, and it's a hard sequel to that movie. It's not like you'll get it. It's like you better have seen it or
yeah.
you're screwed.
You're not going to know who this kid is. And,
yeah.
You know, yeah,
I felt like it was, and I was watching it more hoping it would be a sequel to Unbreakable than it was a sequel to Split. And it to me, it feels more like a sequel to Split than it does a sequel to Unbreakable.
I mean, yeah, but I think also the fact that you're sort of left to wonder, like, David Dunn's been running around Philadelphia doing this stuff for, like, almost two decades.
He's unbreakable, dog.
No, not that I get, but, like, nobody caught him or saw him or photographed him or captured him or anything. Like, it took Secret Squad Sarah Paulson, you know, Black Clover tattoo people to, like, finally bust him.
If you really, I mean, the way that I look at this is, like, the story in the sequel that it's telling is not any dumber than actual comic book stuff. And I mean that with all love. I mean that with all love because, like, comic books can get away with dumb shit because that's just the world that it inhabits, where you're like, your suspension of disbelief is just like, true. Of course, like, we're going to reboot this and now there's going to be a lot of different Spider-Men. You know what I mean? And it's like,
In those movies, they
dumb,
never,
but it's
they,
not.
They never stop and tell you, well, in a comic book, here's
exactly
what we would do.
Oh, yeah. And that's the
and that's the thing that Shyamalan does that keeps bugging me. It's like, A, it feels like you weren't even inspired by good comic books. Like, there's almost something kind of condescending about how he gives us this, like, shitty writing, but then tries to excuse because, well, this is what they do in a comic book. Like, well, not in a good comic book, they wouldn't.
Well.
And then it's just because there are, you read graphic novels, you know there are better ones and worse ones, and ones that are more and less formulaic.
But that's the thing. Like, there are, but there's also, I mean, like, the conventions of comic book dictate kind of a certain kind of elevated stupidity. Does that make sense? Like, there's a certain kind of dumbness to them, even when they're, you know, they're well done. It's just like the means of how you're supposed to tell the stories is so fantastical.
Well, they're over the top, right?
Yeah.
They're like kind of baseline gonzo.
Yeah.
And that's why I like these movies. Like, I like seeing acting class McAvoy going, so, I mean, like, where else would you see a like totally gonzo performance like that, where he's just like, I can't believe that he's able to commit so hard, because Willis definitely was not able to commit very hard.
No, that was the interesting thing, going back and watching Unbreakable. It's like, oh, yeah, this is back when Bruce Willis still gave a shit.
Yeah.
As opposed to now, when he does not.
Yeah,
but McAvoy leaves it all out there, and it's like, it's embarrassingly good, in my opinion. It's so crazy. And I think that Samuel L. also, like, rises to the insanity of the whole thing and, like, gets a look in his eye that scared me a little bit. It's a silly, crazy movie. But everybody makes good points. It's bad. It's not.
yeah,
it's not a good film.
I think the flaw that I had with Glass is when Unbreakable comes out and it speaks about comic books and is the way that it talks about comic books. It's at a time when comic books just weren't the thing like they are now. So it could get away with giving you a title card at the beginning, giving you facts about comic books. It can get away with Elijah Price talking, you know, the quotes that he has, where if you watch them now, you're like, you literally could. But back then, it was like, you know, like, holy shit. Oh, yeah, this is great. But the fact that M. Night Shyamalan just didn't realize that we are all, like, now caught up to how comic books work, and if even the simplest person who doesn't read comic books, just based on their knowledge of comic book movies, doesn't need to be explained literally by the characters. This is the third act when all the characters meet. Like,
yeah, well, also,
all those moments
Wimley
are
doesn't
just like,
know what comic book he doesn't read them for sure, because nobody talks about it was a limited edition. No one says things like that.
No, and you're right. I think you could have made this movie where you're acknowledging the fact that the pop culture landscape is different than it was when Unbreakable came out, and that, yeah, comic books have sort of seeped into the collective DNA. You can get away with a movie like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse now, and people will accept, like, parallel universes and all that kind of crazy shit, which they would not have in 2000. But, yeah, this movie just sort of assumes that we're still as comics ignorant as then. And, oh, God, if they had shown a close-up one more time of that fucking magazine cover with the skyscraper with the words, "A Real Marvel" on it, I was going to strangle
someone. I didn't even catch that.
That's so funny.
Another annoying Easter egg.
I think, like, I saw that and I was just like, I kind of liked it because everything is just so on the nose that you're like, you know what? Yeah, fuck subtlety. Whatever. Just do you know, to me, it kind of seems like old comic book movies in the way that they were. So in a way, you know, Unbreakable was kind of reinventing what a comic book movie would be with the kind of sour, dour tone. And that changed the trajectory of so many comic book movies that came after it. This is before the Batman reboot, all of that kind of stuff. But then it's almost like he's hearkening back to like earlier comic book movies where things were so obvious and so on the nose.
Like
and
the Joel Schumacher Batman's.
Yeah, kind of right. Yeah. Way back to that. But with like, so I guess like if I think about it, it's another kind of revolutionary thing where like maybe soon we're going to be like, oh, fuck, he did revolutionize it. Like, we are fucking doing comic book movies like
it's
this campy now.
It's campy again.
It is campy again. Yeah,
interesting.
I feel like the first movie, you know, Unbreakable is kind of like everybody says, it's this deconstruction of like the superhero myth. Split is just like a straight up like superhero horror story. And then Glass just feels like superhero camp. I mean, there's literally scenes from the 60s Batman movie in this,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. Where I was just definitely. Like, I'm not taking it seriously, even though he's doing it with a serious tone. It's almost like I feel like he's kind of learned a lesson in some ways where it's just like, maybe just embrace dumb shit. You know, because Split was like, embrace dumb shit.
True.
And,
no, it's a
and
goofy-ass
The Visit
genre
was
movie.
Embrace dumb shit. And now he's, and you know, we should talk about budgets I think a lot of people think that he gets a lot of money to make these movies, but
he does not.
You know, and the same thing with The Visit and the same thing with Split. These are all low budget movies. And, you know, I think the majority now of his movies have been made for like less than 10 grand.
He put up $9 million and his house for Glass.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And Shyamalan did.
Yeah. So
of his own money.
Self-funding.
So I think that's why it looks like you. I mean, we talked about Jared and I saw this movie.
Can you imagine being his wife?
Oh my God.
The house, honey?
For this script?
Can I read it again?
I'm pregnant.
You know, when he made Unbreakable, he had a lot of money. I think it was something around $20 million.
Well, yeah,
because
he's coming off
him.
Sixth Sense, which had been gigantic.
Exactly. But he also had the luxury of that to shoot everything in order. And that was a really interesting thing. And when you have that luxury, I do think movies are better for it.
If
you can, and you know, he was able to do some like big budget derail train bullshit, but he was able to shoot everything in order with that money. And you know, you do get a pretty great product with Unbreakable. I think it's a pretty solid film that stands.
I don't want to shit on it. I'm just saying that seeing it for the first time now is not the same as it would have been seeing it the first time like 20 some years ago.
It's like reading. Have you ever read Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde? If you read the book, the entire book, it's just predicated on you at the end realizing it's the same guy. You can't read it now. It's like annoying. Yep. You're like, yeah, I know he's the bad guy. Right?
Yeah.
Psycho's still good, but you know, you're never gonna not know that Janet Leigh bites.
Right.
It, you know?
What?
Hey.
Remember. It's not so much what happens in a movie, April. It's how it happens.
Oh, you're using my own words up against me.
Damn right.
I'm actually a believer that I think sometimes M. Night gets a bad rap because he has become the director where he almost seems... People talk about him like he's a one-trick pony. Everything is like, oh, with the twists and the reveals and how does it resolve? And actually... think that sometimes there are no twists or in his movie. There's no surprise. That's the third act. It's where we're getting to the end, the finish line. But because we just throw this label on him, people are very quick to toss judgment. How do you all guys feel about M. Night?
I think he kind of relies a lot on third act reveals and twists.
Jesus Christ,
no,
Alonzo.
Look, I don't know. I there's a lot of his films that I never saw. Signs. There's a few. You know, I did
Signs
not.
Is great.
I
did
I
not.
Love Signs.
I did
Signs
not endure Lady in the Water, but boy, did I see The Happening and The Last Airbender and After Earth. So I feel like
you saw
I
the
have
three
a,
worst ones.
Yeah, I feel horrible. Like I have justified like you know level of like when it comes to M. Night Shyamalan because like obviously yes, The Sixth Sense, great movie. You know, brilliantly done and well acted, and yes, there's a cool twist at the end. And then, you know, it's hard for me to not think after that, boy, you're just chasing that cool twist dragon, you know?
Signs, I remember people talking about, oh, the twist in Signs. I was like, there's no twist in Signs.
It's just seeing.
Yeah.
There
the
is
alien.
A twist in Signs, okay. If I think.
Please.
Which is that water kills them. The whole time,
they would come to a planet that's mostly that.
I mean, that's. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's bad writing. You know,
sure.
I don't think that's like a twist.
Also,
it's not like
Faith works at the end. That's sort of a twist. He's been hearing all these things are connected at the end. It's super arbitrary.
Yes,
because it's saying God helped him.
Well, God helps all of us, Jared. What are you not understanding?
That's another episode.
If you say Jesus, Alonso, I'm on board.
Alonso took me seriously when I said that.
I'm going to say he's not good at cameos.
Yes. Yes, we didn't talk about that.
In all of his movies, he's not good at cameos.
I mean, Glass has like three twists.
I'm not saying he doesn't do it.
Okay.
I'm saying people refer to him as the twist guy, the reveal guy.
He fought it for a while. He fought it in interviews like right and early in his career. He was like, I don't want to be known as the twist guy. So he fought it. And then later in interviews, he's like, fuck it, I do twists. This is like what I do. Because he was reared on
Twilight Zone.
He was reared on the Twilight Zone and, you know, Steven Spielberg and kind of combined those two in his sensibility and was just like, this is just what I do. And I don't really know what, I'm just going to stick with my strong suit.
Like, I didn't even see The Village because I remember seeing the trailer and turning to Dave and going, it's going to be the modern day. Like, I just could tell immediately. Shyamalan film this period. Oh, no, it's going to be the modern day. And then, like, the second day it was out, somebody was like, oh, yeah, it's modern day. I'm like, okay, I don't need to see it.
Has he written all of his films? Like, did he write Last Airbender, which I know is a steaming pile?
I mean, obviously it's an adaptation, but I don't know if he actually wrote it.
I'm just curious.
I think he has written
like
all of them.
The only thing
he has written is the movie he executive produced, which was Devil.
Right.
That's true. Right? Yeah.
I like him because he's I think, a competent filmmaker who has a bizarre take on a lot of the stuff I love. It's like, it comes out of left field to me a lot of times, the way he approaches it. So I'm like, wow, this is actually surprising. It's not another boring superhero movie. But I think that a lot of his problem is, like, what people are bringing up is script stuff. And maybe, like, he should try not writing it every time.
He wrote Stuart Little.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, yes, he did.
He also wrote and starred in and directed his debut feature, which was
Praying with Anger?
Yeah, with romantic drama.
And then he did that Rosie O'Donnell Nun movie. Yep. Both of those were pre-Sixth Sense.
Yep.
Is that Matilda?
Nope.
No, Wide Awake.
I don't even know that one.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure he is a Catholic filmmaker in a lot of ways. But again, like, so was Hitchcock. And so it's kind of like almost, I feel like so much of what he brings to the table, it's either Spielberg or it's Hitchcock or it's Rod Serling or it's something else. And it's like, yeah, he does it in a big, glossy, writ large kind of way. But when you dig down, what's he bringing to it that isn't just like this sort of brilliant mimicry of somebody else?
Mentioning Quentin Tarantino right now seems like
no. And I would say the same about him. My beef.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If I'm going to watch somebody who's going to rip off previous like filmmakers of earlier eras, I would much rather it be like Todd Haynes or Pedro Almodovar, just because they're ripping off the kind of filmmakers I like.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go around. Should people screen Glass, stream it, or skip it? Jared, lover of comic books. Ladies and gentlemen, Jared and I went and saw Venom together at the theater.
Yes.
Jared showed up dressed as Venom. That's legit why I have you here today, because Jared loves comic books like nobody else's fucking business.
Venom also, can I give my review of that?
Please do.
A harmless sprinkle of urine. that's my review of Venom. Should they go see Glass? I love Glass. Do not see it.
All right, we got our first skip it on that one.
Yeah.
Make that two. I'm going to say skip it. I thought it was just his movies are too long and they are too far up their own ass, and I just was not having it.
I say stream it because there's going to be one day where you have the flu. And you are like, let me just see what M. Night Shyamalan has been up to. And you're like, what? This is what he's doing? And that's going to be good enough, I think. Yeah.
When I walked out of the theater, I was like, I don't want to see this movie again. Like, I was so disappointed, so disappointed. And in those days, I've warmed up to, I'm going to stream it and give it another shot. Because there has to be some kind of reasoning as to why he went so far away from, I still think Unbreakable is like a very like subtle movie. You know, I mean, it's, you know, we find things out you know, in the last act that kind of are like, oh, shit, I just watched the comic book movie.
I do think it's because people aped on his shit, because people then made serious comic book movies. And so now he's just like,
yeah,
well, that's been done. So
yeah. Yeah. So I say stream it, even though I was very disappointed in it. Yeah.
We're so disappointed in him.
That's what I like about you, Ricky. You're a true believer, buddy.
Yeah,
you're
dude.
Like, this guy rocks. This is going to be awesome. And you're like, dude, it's M. Night. It's a coin toss.
It's totally going to be
at best.
It totally is.
It's like a 20-sided die. There's only one good number.
But it's like, I don't love all his movies, but Unbreakable's Unbreakable's amazing movie. It's regardless of it being a comic book movie. I think it's an amazing film, dude. I mean, fucking Robin Wright is great in that movie. That's when I knew something was up in Glass. We get a shot of Robin Wright's back in this
or
movie.
Or somebody's back pretending to be Robin Wright.
That's our goddamn connective tissue to this. Come on, M. Night. Now I'm salty again. Fuck this movie. Yes, I'll say stream glass, y'all. Stream glass.
So you're saying it's a glass half full.
I was trying so hard to avoid glass puns.
I'm just trying to torture April.
Is half empty or half full worse?
I think half empty's worse, right?
Well, yeah. I'm saying for him it's half full because he's saying stream it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Somehow it's skip
still,
a train.
It's still half empty. It's still half empty.
It's both. That's the paradox.
All right, we're going to take a break. We come back, we will be talking Oscar nominations.
Hi, I am Lori Kilmartin.
And I'm Jackie Cashin.
Together, we host a podcast called
The Jackie and Lori Show.
We're both stand-up comics. We recently met each other because women weren't allowed to work together on the road or in gigs for a long, long time. And so our friendship has been unfolding on this podcast for a couple of years. Jackie constantly works the road. I write for Conan, and then I work the road in between.
We do a lot of stand-up comedy, and so we celebrate stand-up, and
yes,
we also bitch about it.
We keep it to an hour. We don't have any guests. We somehow find enough to talk about every single week. So find us. You can subscribe to The Jackie and Lori Show at Maximum Fun. .org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, bye.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to Who Shot Ya. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio are
April Wolf,
Jared Logan,
Alonzo Duralde.
All right, this morning, right here in Los Angeles, it was the nominations for the 91st Academy Awards, announced by Tracy Ellis Ross and friend of the show, Kumail Nanjiani.
Yes.
We hung out with him the night before. Did you know Kumail was going to announce the Oscars?
I know. He's always doing stuff like that.
Jesus Christ.
I was like, oh, there he is again.
But those announcements happened this morning. If you listen to our show, you know, a couple weeks ago, we had a segment where we wanted to remind the Academy of things that we wanted to see happen. Overall,
did they listen to anything we said?
I don't know. they listened to what you said, Yalitza Aparicio.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
They listened to that.
I was very excited.
Yeah, you
about
got
that.
One.
Yeah.
Woo. It's weird in a year to be as disappointed with the Oscars when the headline is Roma and The Favorite got 10 nominations each. Like, that's amazing. And
yes,
like, neither of those are movies that you traditionally think of as like, oh, that Oscar bait. You know, these are like challenging, interesting, complicated, you know, rich movies from, you know, like not your standard Jason Reitman auteurs. So that's awesome. But there's also a lot of shit in there.
Where's Eighth Grade, my favorite movie
for
of last
instance?
Year?
Yeah,
there are a lot of terrible absences. You know, like Shirkers didn't get a Best Doc nomination, mm-hmm. nor did Won't You Be My Neighbor.
I couldn't believe that Won't You Be My Neighbor didn't get nominated.
My only theory on that one is that Morgan Neville had two docs this year because he also had The Love Me When I'm Dead, which is the one about Orson Welles making his final film.
Which arguably might be better constructed,
yeah,
I think. It's thoughtful edit. The editing is very interesting.
I think it's probably like a better sort of filmmaking thing. Won't Be My Neighbor is a more moving experience, mainly because of the subject matter. So I don't know if those canceled each other out or something, but yeah, that was a surprising omission. You know, Ethan Hawke for First Reformed. Just a lot of absences.
Women directors.
Yeah. Women in a lot of categories, although Nicole Holofcener has an Oscar nomination now.
Nicole Holofcener, which is like, I was going hard for Can You Ever Forgive Me, which was funny because Richard E. Grant, who was nominated for Best Supporting, and also we have one from Melissa McCarthy,
true, yes,
who got a Best Actress nom. But Richard E. Grant's statement was, it's weird that the Oscars think that these two actors directed themselves. And I was like, thank you, Richard, because Marielle Heller did a great job on this. You know,
that was a great movie. I was happy to see him. But yeah, I thought Marielle was kind of shafted, didn't get that.
Can we let everybody know who
she deserved?
Can we let everybody know who Nicole
Holofcener?
Yes, yes.
She co-wrote Can You Ever Forgive Me? She is a sort of legendary U.S. indie filmmaker. Her films include Walking and Talking, Lovely and Amazing,
Sliding
Friends
Doors
with Money. Which one?
Did she do Sliding Doors?
No, not Sliding Doors.
Which one should she do?
Enough Said.
Yes.
Yeah, who's just this year, she's had a Netflix film called The Land of Steady Habits. The kind of director who I wish could make a movie every year. Hmm. I think she's so great. And, you know, we usually get one about every 5 years from her. And so I'm thrilled that she is now an Oscar.
Even if she can't direct them, like...
Yeah, write more, whatever.
Let her write...
Produce more of her scripts.
More of them, yes.
Yeah. I kind of want to just, like, stick to categories because so we're not jumping around too much.
Sure.
But as far as, like, Best Picture, I thought I was... Were you upset that you did your movie, Paddington 2?
I you know, in my heart, I knew that ship had sailed because Warner Brothers didn't even send out screeners. They made zero efforts to promote that at all. Like, LAFCA gave Hugh Grant runner-up and Best Supporting Actor, but that, not because the studio did anything to promote that film.
Well, sorry, this year we're sticking with serious Best Picture nominees like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes, yes.
Serious films.
Guys.
Jared, have you seen Bohemian Rhapsody?
I've seen some of it.
That's the correct answer. Yeah. As you turned it off,
to
you
see
like,
some of it, it's to see
there's
all
no
of
more
it.
Cats. Like, yeah. You do the rest of the movie without cats.
And Ricky, in answer to your question, are there really enough people in the Academy who are going to fall for some bullshit like Green Book? Yes,
yeah.
There is.
Yeah, oh, that's like Academy catnip, that kind of thing. A reverse driving Miss Daisy?
My when we first reviewed this movie, and my thing was like, are people still around who are into this? Is the driving Miss Daisy crowd still waiting for this movie and being like, yes, who are in the Academy? Because we've had, was it last year when all these new members joined the Academy?
Mm-hmm, yep.
So I just wasn't expecting that. I was expecting that to just be pushed to the side and seeing things like Black Panther, like Black Klansman, I don't know about Roma. Roma kind of feels like it would be nominated. Like, that's not really surprising me. But Black Panther and Black Klansman, those are surprises to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Black Panther is the first superhero movie to get a nomination. This is Spike Lee's first Best Director nomination after making movies for 30-plus years.
Malcolm X, Do the Right Thing.
Crooklyn.
But yeah, that's kind of insane. Like,
25th
I mean,
Hour.
I liked Black Klansman a lot, but, like, I mean... Those other films you mentioned are better.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think that there's a lot, you know, it's a thing every year where it's like, okay, I wouldn't give you the Oscar for this movie, but I would give it to you for the last 10. Mm-hmm. So like Sam Elliott's nomination for Star is Born is kind of the same thing. It's like, maybe not. I don't say that this is the one where it all comes together, but this is the one where they finally noticed. So like, okay, I'll take it.
I think he'll get it because
it's
the old fogey award. It's the supporting actor award.
Yeah.
Enjoy your retirement.
I think if Spike Lee wins, it's an acknowledgement of like, oh yeah, do the right thing. Yeah.
I mean, I want him to win, but it's kind of like when Scorsese won for The Departed. I was just like, this is
good
what,
like, really?
Yeah.
Like,
this is what we're doing?
Yeah.
This is what we're doing
insane.
Now? Another one that feels like it... No, I haven't seen the movie. I'm hearing both angles of, like, she deserves to win. And like you said, where it's like, you've made all these movies, you have a career, is Glenn Close for The Wife.
I haven't watched
Best
it yet.
Actress.
And I haven't watched the Van Gogh movie with Willem Dafoe. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen the Florian Henkel von Donnersmarck movie, which is up for a few things as well.
You haven't seen your homework movie.
I know. Broccoli all around.
I'll tell you, I'll say it again. I really loved The Wife. And Glenn Close delivers... a performance that, to me, even watching it on my computer, I was just like, oh shit, that's fucking good. Mm. Like, and you put it, sorry, but if you put it next to a Lady Gaga performance and you watch Glenn Close, you'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, what the fuck? Why are they in the same category? Like, I still think Lady Gaga did a fine job, you know? Mm-hmm. It was good enough, and it was, you know, she had a nice scene partner and some things, but there's just something like the technical level of acting acting where you see someone and it's almost like going to community theater and you're like, oh yeah, this was really good. And then you go and see like a Broadway play and you're like, oh fuck, I had no idea what they were supposed to be doing back at community theater.
Well, it's like there's somebody has the line about like, you know, when you see a bear on a unicycle, it's not so much that it does it well, it's that it does it at all.
Yeah.
You know, so like the idea that like Lady Gaga can like not embarrass herself in any way and can hold her own opposite Bradley Cooper and have a few moments of genuine empathy and stuff, it's like, oh, well, great. Yeah, but then you look at, yeah, you look at somebody more seasoned, you're like, well, this is a whole other level of
thing. Yeah, but why should she get a Best Actress nomination? It makes no sense.
Well, sometimes people get wrapped up in the larger push of a movie. Like I saw somebody this week saying, don't be shocked if like Linda Cardellini gets a Green Book nomination because that movie is popping up so much. And instead it went in a way that I'm very happy about. Marina de Tavira got nominated for Roma, and I don't know that she was on a lot of people's radars, but that's a dynamite performance.
Yeah,
I'm glad
absolutely.
She's in there. The doc feature, now I did mention that I was disappointed about Shirkers not getting nominated, but very thrilled about Minding the Gap because I love that movie.
Yeah.
And very happy about Hale County This Morning, This Evening, which is beautifully shot and a lot more experimental than an Academy doc feature is. If y'all have not seen that one, I would recommend it.
What is Hale County This Morning, This Evening?
It's from a filmmaker named Ramel Ross. It's his first film, and it's actually sort of executive produced and kind of guided by the great Thai filmmaker, any excuse to say his name, Apichatpong Virasethakun.
No way you did that right, dude.
It is,
no way.
It, years of practice.
I don't believe it for a second.
my husband's a big fan. anyway, and so it's this kind of like snapshot of this community, and you know, it touches on issues of race and poverty, and but never in a kind of like let's wallow in misery kind of way. Like there's a real sort of lyricism to the way this film is shot, and it doesn't. It's not a traditional documentary in terms of, like, there's no narration. They're not telling you who these people are, and you don't get a big arc about, you know, what they accomplish. It's just this kind of glimpse into their lives, and it's really gorgeous.
Okay. All right. Is there a favorite you have in the Best Picture category, Jared?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
The favorite is my favorite.
Was it really?
Yeah, I love Lanthimos.
Yorgos Lanthimos?
I like Lanthimos.
Yeah.
I like all of his movies. I love them. They are very strange and odd and divisive. And I was so happy because I said, oh, he's making one for them. He's got the big stars. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I mean, his one for them is an 18th century costume drama. But still. And then when I got there, I was like, yes, it's fucking weird.
Yeah.
It's so weird. And it ends weird. And my friends who went and saw with me were like, ew. And I was like, yes, I love this film. So I hope that it, I hope that it goes all the way, baby. But I don't think it will. I think Green Book will win and we'll all feel a little sadder about society.
Yeah.
We should say that Paul Schrader was nominated for his first Oscar.
Yes.
And
oh,
that's
wow.
For writing the original screenplay. And he,
For First Reformed.
And I think he said like in a statement earlier today, he was just like, I don't know, fuck, I never put any stock in the Oscars' opinions because they always choose shit, but now they chose me, so.
He used to be a film critic, God bless him.
Exactly, right?
It only takes the Oscars 25 to 40 years to realize what's good.
Oh, this
only.
Sam Elliott kid, he's going places.
The Oscars are going to get it right after the world ends, you know? Like, that's not...
all right, word. We are going to wrap it up. But before we do, it's time for Staff Picks, y'all. Every week we let you know about a movie that we think you folks should check out, whether it's streaming, in the theater, what have you. Alonzo, I'll start with you.
My other podcast, Linoleum Knife, we have a level on our Patreon called Selector where we send out items several times a year. It'll be a movie or a book or a CD or whatever. And we recently did, I had sent out the book of James Baldwin's Go Tell It on the Mountain that we all read and talked about. And then I discovered that there was I guess it was made for like American Playhouse in the early 80s, a TV adaptation directed by TV vet Stan Dan Lathan, who is the father of Sanaa Lathan, actress. And it's streaming for free on Amazon Prime, if you get Amazon Prime. And it's fast. I mean, it's a really good adaptation. I mean, like, again, as we saw with the Beale Street Could Talk, there's so much internal going on with James Baldwin prose that it's hard to maybe translate to that to the screen. But they do a pretty good job. And the cast is stunning because you've got, you know, people like, you know, Paul Winfield and Rosalind Cash, but like up-and-comers like a very young Ving Rhames, a very young Giancarlo Esposito, a very young Alfre Woodard, and CCH Pounder. Fucking Dwayne Wayne is in this movie.
Oh, damn.
Kenny Bardison. So, for that alone, it's kind of fascinating. But it's also a pretty good adaptation. It has kind of a stodgy PBS-ness about it, but worth checking out. I did not know it existed. So go tell it on the mountain. It's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, hell yeah. That's what's
awesome.
Jerry, what do you got for the people?
I just watched this awesome movie. Well, I watched half of it. I'm finishing it tonight. watching half was enough to really let you know the quality. It's called Wild Tales. It's an Argentinian guy, and his other credit is he made an Argentinian television series, and now he's made this thing. I must say, our friend Kumail told me to watch it, and I was like, okay, I'm going to watch it because he always has the best recs. And it's an anthology film, which I always hate those because they're always uneven. Everything so far, I've watched the first three stories, is amazing.
Creepshow 2, though.
Well, Creepshow 2. This is different, though. It's not horror, and it's not sci-fi. It's like... just stories of they're like ironically horrible. They're like
it's kind of O. Henry-ish.
Yes, okay. Yeah. It's really 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 cool, and it looks really good, and I really love it, and it was making me laugh really hard. Wild Tales, and I'm gonna butcher Relatos Salvajes. I think is how you say it. And it's native tongue.
Salvajes.
All right.
It's not a dud in the bunch, I can tell you. Yeah. You'll enjoy the rest of it.
I can't wait to finish it tonight.
Where is it at? Where can they see that at?
I rented it on Prime.
Okay.
Yeah. Or, we should say that we did an episode on Switchblade Sisters of Wild Tales with Sarah Adina Smith.
Yeah.
And it is produced by Pedro Almodovar. And I'm on a Peter Weir kick.
Okay.
Or should I say Peter Weird? So sorry.
You went to junior high with him.
I know that there's a TV show of Picnic at Hanging Rock, but I do think that people should be revisiting his movie Picnic at Hanging Rock because it's just so fucking weird, and it's a testament to what you can do with atmosphere without a giant budget, and you can make something that's strange and almost sci-fi and very atmospheric, and it exists in a different space. And I watched this again, and I was like, I'm very sure that Sofia Coppola had to have derived so much of her style from early Peter Weir stuff. Not even just that, but like the wave and the colors, the atmosphere, the sound design. The fucking sound design in this is enough to make you feel strange. And I just love Peter Weir so much. Early Peter Weir stuff.
It's like The Favorite. Don't let the corsets fool you. This is some fucked up shit.
Weird.
I've seen Picnic and Hanging Rock. What's another one I should watch from him?
Peter Weir?
Yeah. I think The Wave.
The Wave.
The Last Wave.
The Last Wave. Okay, great.
A movie that I have is a movie that actually you and I watched last week. I loved this film. It's a Turkish horror movie called Baskin.
Yes.
The movie came out in 2015. It's directed by Can Evrenol.
Mm.
It's a movie that wears its influences, I think, on its sleeve. It is very Blair Witch. It is very, it starts off almost like a Goodfellas scene. It's a horror story told from the point of view of this police squad who is having kind of like a Goodfellas dinner where it starts off, everybody's laughing at each other and having
and
a good
they're
time.
They're kind of corrupt as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
very shady. And then
somebody gets his fucking shine box.
it goes in that direction, you know. The one person finds some shit funny that one motherfucker does another think is one motherfucker other doesn't think is funny. And then the story just goes in this direction that I was just not expecting at all. Just great Turkish horror police ghost story. Baskin,
you've got my attention.
Yeah,
what's that?
I'm not as familiar with Turkish films, so
me neither.
You've got my attention.
Oh, and where can one see this?
go over to Kamel's house.
Shudder.
No, it was Shudder. It's on Shudder. It's on Shudder. Okay. If you subscribe to Shudder,
yeah, and you should mention it goes full Clive Barker, so you need to be ready for gore. If you,
I've been saying that Clive Barker is coming back. Everything about Clive Barker is like in it. I mean, fucking Mandy, you guys. It's all Clive Barker. Ugh.
There's an Oscar snub. Best cinematography, Mandy.
Sound design. Sound design, and that's the last score from Johansson.
Johansson, right.
Yeah, and we'll never get another Johan Johansson score. It's just Mandy, and that's, getting snubbed.
Also, shout out to our listeners for putting on our Facebook page that Near Dark, a movie that we talk about here, is now available to watch on Mubi. If you go to Mubi, MUBI.com.
Mm-hmm. For a month, right?
For a month, you can watch Near Dark. Can't recommend that movie enough as well. Thank you very much, Jared Logan, for being here,
thank
dog.
Thank you, guys. This was
fantastic
fun.
To see you. Thank you, sir. Thank you both for being here as well.
Thank you.
Next week, we are going to be talking Stan and Ollie, Alonzo.
Woo!
It's happening, dog. It's happening. Shout out to everybody who's been leaving us reviews on our Apple Podcast page. If you leave us a 5-star review, we will read that on the show. Let's start off with JDR_42. They say, in every episode of this podcast, I learn something and I laugh out loud and get weird looks from my coworkers. I don't know what more you could want.
That's all there.
That's it. That's all we need, yo.
Thanks, JDR. BW10Z says, seriously, y'all, this is the best podcast I've listened to. Every Friday, I get to run to the gym and laugh my butt off while trying not to fall off the treadmill. It's so nice to listen to great movie reviews from people with varied viewpoints, where everyone cares about each other, even if their opposing viewpoint is terribly wrong. You'll come away learning about cinema, having a blast, and with some staff picks to check out. Is this important? Should you care? Definitely. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Or ma'am.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. If anybody else, if you all have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod. You can send us an email at WhoShotYaMaximumFun.org. Our WhoShot line is WSY803-1664. You can call and leave us a voicemail with any questions you have about something you've heard on the show.
Thoughts about the Oscars? You have them.
But you
also have to do it with... within under a minute,
yes.
We'll say.
Yes.
Under a minute. Yes. Under
impossible.
A minute.
Thoughts about the Oscars in under a minute? It's never been done.
Time yourselves, people.
Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of MaximumFun.org. And that's what's up, y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.